Hello and good afternoon, and welcome to The Ace on Ford Observer Radio. I'm Mike, your host, and it is Thursday, the 3rd of May, 2018, and I'm coming to you live from Ford Observer Central Command here in Austin, Texas. The show is brought to you by Ready Made Resources, the official outfitter for Ford Observer. Find them at readymaderesources.com, and be sure to tell them that Ford Observer sent you. On today's show, we have a good friend, John Mosby, a former Army Special Operations veteran, a small arms instructor, and author. Chances are pretty good that you've read his blog, Mountain Gorilla, or read one of his three books, The Reluctant Partisan, Volumes 1 and 2, or Forging the Hero. I recommend all three, and I'll put those links in the show notes for everyone as well. John Mosby was a big influence on me. He was one of the main reasons I started the Guerrilla America blog back in the day, and I'm very glad to have him on the show. How are you? How you been? How's life on the farm?
Good. Busy.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, let's go ahead and jump into this then. Let's talk about where you see things headed right now. You've written before and talked before about Sir John Glubb's Fate of Empires, and it certainly appears that the United States is an empire in decline. You made that point very explicitly in the past. What are your expectations of the future? Where do you see the country going from here?
It's one of those things that the only honest answer you can make is I'm not entirely sure. I suspect we're going to continue to see a decline or a degradation in standards of living, certainly for the middle class. You know, everybody makes a big deal about, oh, the stock market's up. But when you start crunching the employment numbers and stuff, like I did in Forging the Hero, it starts becoming obvious that the numbers are up, but that's because the numbers are getting cooked religiously. You know, it happened under Obama, it's happening under Trump, it's happened under everybody because everybody wants everything to look good and make sure people feel good. As far as the politics and the biology stuff, I think you'll see the same thing we've been seeing happen, and it'll just accelerate a little bit at a time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you see these elections coming up, or maybe the next recession, as a trigger point for more political violence?
Yes and no. I mean, yes, because anytime you've got a society that's as fractured as ours is right now, you know, most people don't identify as Americans anymore. They identify as hyphenated Americans of some sort or another. So when you lose that centralized cultural identity that the empire encourages and really needs, you fracture society. So anytime you've got that fracturing going on and you have something like an election coming up where this group thinks their guy should get it because he'll get what they want and vice versa, you're going to see increased hostility and probably increased violence. As far as it being the catalyst for a massive, you know, tunnel socioeconomic or collapse, I don't know. You know, the cool guy answer would probably be to say that, you know, oh, yes, this is going to do this. Riots in the street are going to lead to, you know, sabotage of this infrastructure, that infrastructure, and that's going to cause the collapse. But we just don't know. And trying to BS people about it is just ridiculous. I drive a lot when I'm teaching. I spend a lot of time on the interstate highways. And we don't need the elections, and we don't need social unrest for infrastructure breakdowns to happen, because they're happening as we speak. You know, there's huge stretches of highway and interstate in this country where the infrastructure is just done, you know, and there's just no money to replace it, to repair it.
Mm-hmm. Let's skirt away from these mass events or mass casualty events, because they are extreme and they are low frequency. That's why they don't happen very often. Let's look at a day-to-day perspective. What does your ideal community look like as far regarding your neighbors, some of the things you talked about in Forging the Hero? What are some types of things that you're doing on a day-to-day basis, or what's your best advice for others to do on a day-to-day basis if they're concerned about these future events?
When we moved back to the Southern Mountains where we live, where I grew up, one of the first things that I did when we bought property is I made sure of two things. Number one, I met my neighbors. You know, one of my neighbors, I stopped in the middle of the road and got out and walked up to his fence line to talk to him and introduce myself while he was mowing his yard one day. I got to know him, you know, let him know what we were doing within reason. I mean, but let them get to know what we were doing, got to know who we are, you know, let them meet my kids. And just got to know them and made it clear, hey, if you need help with anything, I'm here. Let me know and I'll come help. You know, most of my neighbors raise cows and horses and other livestock, and their cows are out. And it's like, hey, I saw your cows out. You need some help getting them in. Or, you know, hey, I saw your horse the other day, and it was like 3 miles from your house. Is everything all right? And generally, people, I mean, as long as you're not being a jerk and you're like, man, your cows are out, they were eating my grass again, you know, people appreciate that, and that's, it just builds rapport in the community. The other thing that helped is I made sure people that I had grown up knew that I had grown up in the area, not because that necessarily matters, but because it makes them realize that we're not, you know, Californians coming in to turn it into California. You know, or New Yorkers trying to get away from the city and turn, you know, the country into New York City. So I think just, you know, having neighbors that you know, being helpful to your neighbors, even at your own expense, and just making sure people you know that you're on their side is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. What about folks who live in the city or a built-up area or a suburb? I mean, you get to know your neighbors. That only goes so far. What's the next step beyond that, do you think?
You know, in urban areas, in real urban areas, I'm not talking, you know, the outskirts of Salt Lake City in one of the suburbs or something. I'm talking, you know, real urban areas. You know, inner city D.C., inner city Atlanta, places like that. What we're really looking at is most of those neighborhoods have been their neighborhood for a long time, and there aren't any outsiders. You know, if you lived in the same hood in the city your whole life, you know everybody. You know who's a good guy. You know who's a bad guy. You know who you can rely on. You know who you can't rely on. And just work towards building stronger relationships with the ones you know you can rely on. As far as the suburbs, I mean, number one, the suburbs are an accident of history, I think. You know, it's a completely foreign concept to the human experience, but that doesn't change the fact that they do exist. So I suspect, having never really lived in the suburbs myself, that the key to the suburbs is the same thing. You know, hey, throw a block party for your neighborhood and invite all your neighbors on your street or on your block. You know, it's one thing to get to know them and be like, hey, yeah, you know, can I borrow your lawnmower? Hey, yeah, hey, why don't you borrow my weed eater or something, which is good. And I'm not denigrating that at all. But, it, you know, one of the things that I talked about in Forging the Hero is the concept of gift exchange and the gift exchange economy being critical. You know, even if we're giving things up and we're losing out in the bargain, it appears at first, in the long run, with most people, that ends up building social debt, and they recognize that. You know, so whether it's 3 months from now when you're like, hey, I gotta move this refrigerator from my kitchen into my shed out back, can you come give me a hand? They're like, yeah, sure. Remember when you threw that party and you gave all the kids, you know, you had ice cream for all the kids? Yeah, I can come help you move your refrigerator. Or if it's 3 years from now when things have gone completely to crap and you're like, hey, I need somewhere to stash my wife and kids for a day while I go do this thing that I've got to do. Can they stay with you? And it really, what you're going to be able to ask people to do in the future depends entirely on what you've done for them in the present. You know, and I don't know. You know, I've had a lot of people that I've talked to that say, well, that's just fantasy. That's just make-believe. The world doesn't work that way. But honestly, my world does work that way. And I know a lot of people that I talk to in the preparedness community and elsewhere that their world really does work that way. And I believe you're going to see an increasing amount of that as things become more difficult to acquire materially and as people become more distanced from other people socially, where people just start relying on their friends and their neighbors more, like they did once upon a time.
Sure. Yeah, it's almost like there's an element of the world is what you make it. And if you're not instilling that culture in your community, if your world doesn't work like that, then it's because you're not making it that way. And that's kind of one thing I got from, or one of the many things I got from Forging the Hero and building tribe. So let's stay on this topic of tribe. I know a lot of people have questions. They say, it's not easy for me to meet my neighbors, or I know my neighbors, but they are politically unlike me. They're ideologically unlike me. Is this a, for listeners who are in that situation, maybe they're a red house in a blue neighborhood.
Here's my take on that. I live in the rural South. Okay. Most of my neighbors have voted Democrat for 6-7 generations. I don't know how far back. You know, and a lot of them still do, you know, not even because they agree with what the Democrats say, but just because that's the tradition. We vote Democrat. And ultimately what I try to get across to people is, you know, in my neighborhood, and I use that term loosely, but in my neighborhood, what everyone recognizes, whether they vote blue, whether they vote red, whether they vote, you know, purple with aquamarine highlights, what they recognize is that ultimately nothing that happens in D.C. matters to them if things in their own neighborhood aren't taken care of. So my answer to those people is, why are you discussing politics anyway?
Well, I wouldn't even say discussing politics, but in terms of liberty and your ideal for what's best for the community, is that a case where you should be working to change the community, or should you move?
It depends. You know, if you can move and find people who are already more like you, then by all means, I think you should do so. But for a lot of people, that's not an option. You know, the guy that's way, way, way underwater on his mortgage, and you know, there's no buyer for his house, even if he wasn't underwater on his mortgage, that guy can't just up and move. You know, the guy who lives, you know, I had a student in a class a couple of years ago who was complaining about his neighborhood and stuff, and somebody made the comment about, well, why don't you just move? He's like, because my wife grew up there and her family's there for, like, you know, 3 degrees of separation and 8 generations, and she ain't moving, and I'm not divorcing her just to move. You know, so people that are tied down like that, no, moving is not the answer. So the solution or the answer, and I believe I mentioned this in Forging the Hero, and I know I've talked about it in articles, is somebody that's tied to their neighborhood, if it's for work, you know, because they've got to support their family, I get that. And in that case, you know, work the situation. You know, do what I do, tell my kids, just work the problem. When it comes to the person that's tied to their neighborhood because of family ties and commitments, my answer is, who raised you? You know, where, if you grew up in that neighborhood, I guarantee you, you have more in common with those people than you have differences. Because you grew up in the same environment. You grew up in the same community. You can't grow up in a community and not share community values with the people in that community to some degree or another.
My concern is 2 or 3 or 5 years down the road when politics is embedded in this national emergency that we could very well have, that it seems like ideology is going to play a much larger, more important role day to day than certainly it does now. Let's even forget about what happens in D.C. Your local city council, their decisions are going to affect you. And I guess maybe there's no right answer to this, but the general, I'll just repeat the question. Best advice for someone in that situation, other than meeting your neighbors, getting to know them, and focusing on, hey, let's protect our family in this situation. What happens if you are a political outcast because of what you believe, or you become targeted for your beliefs?
In that case, I would say that if you cannot move for whatever reason, the best option might be to shut your mouth and not discuss politics with people. You know, and that sounds horribly unliberty-like, but that's reality. You know, if you're in a situation where the people that you have to deal with, whether for daily life or business or survival, are so diametrically opposed to you that you feel like you can't even say anything about it, but you can't get out either, keep your mouth shut. And just work around it, you know, and that sounds, you know, to some degree, some people are probably like, man, that sounds like cowardice. That sounds like this. Dude, that's working as part of the underground. That's working as part of the auxiliary, is just doing your thing to make sure that your cultural values survive, you know? So you live in this neighborhood and it's got really crappy politics, and you live in this town, it's got really crappy politics, and you keep your mouth shut and keep your head down and get by, you know, go along to get along. And you're teaching your kids the whole time, hey, yeah, we're keeping our mouths shut because we have to in order for our values to survive. You know, look at the history of the Jewish people during the Middle Ages. You know, I don't know anybody that thinks, you know, and I'm only using this because it's the obvious example. I'm not making any comment about Jewish people whatsoever in any way, shape, or form. But I don't know anybody that would say, oh, well, the Jews failed in surviving despite all the cards stacked against them during the Middle Ages. You know, when it was necessary, they're like, yeah, we converted to Christianity. We're not Jewish anymore, and we're just going to be Christians from now on. While they were still practicing their ancestral faith in the dark times.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the auxiliary, because one of your readers and a listener of this podcast, Michael M., wants to ask you a question. He wrote in, what are some suggestions on forming an auxiliary-based preparedness group? So he's in a community. He wants to build an auxiliary type of preparedness group in his area. What's your advice?
I would say if you have a group of people who recognize, hey, we are not going to be part of the paramilitary guerrilla force if things go bad. We're not going to be out there patrolling for security. And, you know, we're not going to be out there doing the underground thing, sabotaging subversion or anything like that. Then by definition, you're going to be part of the auxiliary. So number one is look at the tasks the auxiliary traditionally is tasked with and start preparing yourself and focusing your preparations on fulfilling one or more of those tasks. You know, maybe you've got somebody that's a truck driver and you're like, hey, we need to start looking at, we're going to, you know, maybe he's like, hey, I'm going to be around to provide transportation for, you know, other people in the community within our community if they need to go places. So instead of just driving from point A to point B at work every day, that person starts driving alternate routes and starts mapping out different routes and ways to go. You know, he's taking the back roads. He's looking, you know, on his days off, he's driving down different back roads. He's stockpiling spare parts for his vehicles so he can keep his vehicles running. Maybe he's buying a couple extra vehicles for cash somewhere, leaving them unregistered and just parking them in the backyard and keeping them maintained. Maybe it's somebody that's a nurse or a doctor or a paramedic, and they're like, hey, put me running a gun on a patrol is dumb. So I'm going to set myself up so that I can run a safe house, hospital slash nursing home to take care of the wounded and injured and sick. So in addition to their normal preparedness stuff, you know, beans, bullets, Band-Aids, they're going to stockpile extra Band-Aids and extra surgical equipment and this and that and that and this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I hope that answers the question. Next, we'll move on to Kevin J's question. What was your influence for writing Forging the Hero and developing a tribal mindset?
So I really started looking at the tribal model again. When I started seeing all these people in the blogosphere and in the preparedness world talking about tribe this, tribe that, tribe this, and I was seeing people using terms that, as a historian, I knew, you know, it was kind of like the line from The Princess Bride. They were using the word, but they didn't really know what the word meant. And as I thought more about that, I realized that I had really kind of grown up in that environment and had the same things preached to me as a kid by my family, you know, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles, you know, my parents, the whole nine yards. So when I started looking at it in more depth, it was like, you know, if people are going to talk about building tribes and community networking, maybe somebody needs to sit down and explain what these words actually mean and put them into the context of preparedness and decline. As far as, you know, beyond that, it was simply the more that I looked at the path that we seem to be on as a, I don't even want to say nation, but as a nation, for lack of a better term, the more I recognized the parallels with Rome. And, you know, I read Globe when I was in college, and I'd always remembered it, but I could never remember who the author was or what the name of the paper was or anything. And then I started looking. I was like, what the hell was that paper? I started looking for it. I found Glove. And I was like, that's right. That's who it was. And I just started. So I reread it. And then I started reading Toynbee again and Spengler and started looking at the morphological patterns of history or the morphological study of history, looking at the patterns instead of the dates and events, and said, you know, this stuff was really, really familiar. And it just started clicking into place that this is what we're going through. This, it's not, you know, I don't care about an EMP. I don't care about, you know, the dollar collapses, because you can survive all that stuff. People have survived things like that. I'm worried about my cultural values, the values that I grew up with that have made me enjoy my life surviving. So that was my influence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great answer. Very good. Yeah, I have one more question for you here, and I'll let you go, and let's get you back on again next month, or maybe even later this month. Michael M. wants to ask, how is the new book coming along?
Which of the three? So I have one of the books that I'm working on is completely outlined and most of the way written. We're working on doing the photos for it pretty quick. And I'm hoping to have it out by, I thought I was going to be able to release it the 1st of June, but certainly by the 4th of July.
Okay, at least by the 4th of July. Do you have a title worked out, a topic?
It's going to be a pistol book. Beyond that, I don't have any details.
Okay,
it's going to be specifics on the pistol.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, I will include links to everything, to your books as well. Do you have any other thoughts, anything else you'd like to leave your readers and listeners with before you go?
Just, you know, just the same things I'm always saying. Look around your neighborhood and pay attention to what's going on in your neighborhood. Worry less about the Beltway and more about, you know, Broad Street or Main Street or whatever the main street in your town is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's where it's at. You know, I just read a comment on your Facebook page this morning. Somebody had made a comment about the tribalism in America causing more chaos. And it's not wrong. You know, if we could go back to some mythic 1950s society where everybody either identified as an American or wanted to identify as an American, with no hyphenation, that would be great. You know, I have no complaints about having grown up as part of the American empire at its peak. Because it's certainly never been anything but good for me. However, recognizing that tribalism is there and it's not going to go away no matter how bad we wish for it to, I think most people would be best served by just accepting that it's happening and dealing with it and facing it and then accepting that, hey, this is what I need to be doing to deal with this. I'm not going to change the minds of, 318 million people now. So what I probably ought to be doing is just focus on controlling what's within my sphere of control. So that's my big thing for people. Just control what you can control and don't worry about what you can't, because you can't do anything about it anyway.
Sure. Well, Johnny, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show. And I'll take some more questions from your readers and our listeners, and maybe we can have you back on again later this month for another round.
Great. I look forward to it. We'll talk to you later, buddy.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Yep.
Yeah, big thank you to John Mosby for coming on the show. Again, I'm going to have links to his books and to his blog. It's a must-read blog. I'll put those up in the show notes. And as always, if you enjoyed today's show, please definitely let us know. A 5-star rating and review sure goes a long way in expanding our reach. You can leave one on a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, or on iTunes, rather. If you'd like to... by the way, on YouTube, we're also posting the audio to YouTube. If you'd like to help out the show financially, you can visit patreon.com/forwardobserver and donate a buck or two or five a month or however much the show means to you. Lastly, you can support the Forward Observer mission by becoming a subscriber to our premium intelligence products. Thank you to our current subscribers and everyone who supports our mission here at Forward Observer. We certainly cannot do this without you. There's no show on Fridays. I'll be back on Monday. And until then, stay out front.